Hello and welcome to Dealcast, the voice of Merger Market, the world's leading publication about mergers and acquisitions. I'm Juliana Needham, a journalist who's covered M&A for a decade. Now, the world of banking has changed immeasurably in the past decade. Lines between traditional banks, challenger banks, and fintechs are becoming increasingly blurred. So what are the big opportunities in this evolving landscape? To find out, I'm joined by Thomas Krajicek, who is an M&A partner in the Frankfurt office of Clifford Chance, focusing on financial services, and he's also co-head of Clifford Chance's European corporate M&A practice, and also by Rupert Koch, who is one of the senior editors for Merger Market in Europe. Hi, Thomas. Hi, Rupert. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Juliana.
Hi, Juliana. Always a pleasure to be here.
Could we kick off with an insight into the corporate landscape for European fintechs in the third quarter of 2025, maybe outlining the ecosystem where traditional banks fit into that picture?
Oh, that's a complex question, Juliana. I'll try to be brief and structured. I think when you say the broader landscape, I think you need to differentiate between two things, that you commonly see or actually use. That's the fintech that's in your hands, on the iPhones, on the computers, fintech that actually feels like a virtual bank. So the client-facing side of things. And then there's a much larger underbelly of this, equally important, but and probably even overall more sizable, which is things that are supporting, servicing, providing the infrastructure to all of what we're seeing on the outside, some of it feeding into what I said earlier, the client-facing new world, but also modernizing and transforming the old world of classical banking and bringing it up to speed with new processes and value chains.
And Thomas, two of the huge trends in finance and financial institutions, cryptocurrency and AI, where do they fit into the picture?
I would say they are becoming elements that won't go away. I mean, AI, certainly, it's going to be omnipresent and it's transforming basically everything as we speak. And on crypto, I think that's a very specialized, very topical, but complicated area that is so specific, it would take an expert to talk for an hour. So I think that's for another time to dig into. But they will clearly both continue to have their place and a very important one.
Thanks, Thomas. And so could we look at the big opportunities in the fintech space in Europe, please?
The big opportunities, I think, are precisely in that change. Yeah, when you look 10 years back, maybe even 15 years back, people were demonizing fintech or actually finding it super sexy to be the disruptors, like overthrowing the system, so to speak. But I wouldn't see it that way. For me, the whole evolution is more of a convergence between the new and the old. So bringing things slowly but surely into a new shape. Some of these things may obviously feel more brutal to those who are directly impacted. But if you look at it from a 10,000 foot altitude level, it's a very planned, very systematic evolution. And when you look at it from that perspective, the opportunities are by and large twofold. One of the opportunities, which I think is for all of us, as not only as interested parties, but also as users, is that it's going to make the entire service experience, the customer experience, much, not only much more modern, but faster, easier, cheaper. And that on the back end of it brings me to the second piece, the second big opportunity. Whilst it induces, motivates, provokes, and forces banks to modernize, I mean, there's no other way, that's very clear, or else they become part of being swept away like the Tyrannosaurus Rex ages ago. The key thing is that fintech developments allow people to modernize banks, whilst on the side of those banks that are just modernizing, totally, entirely new things come out of the ground, and sometimes they have radical success. Sometimes they're like a blip, come up, go away again. And when I say opportunities, they are probably in what I see as the biggest trend. It's the convergence between all of this, and I'll go into that for just a minute, because convergence is quite an abstract term. What I mean by this is the following: when you are looking at all the opportunities in a technical sense, a bank, a classical huge behemoth bank, will have thousands of options in terms of embracing new technology. Which one of these technologies will really be the killer application or the thing that clients love, most of the time takes years to pan out. And so it's always been, like in other industries, a smart thing to do, like in a farm team, in American football or basketball, just to have venture capitalists and pioneering entrepreneurs build something and have thousands of them and let evolution play it out, like sort of soft capitalist Darwinism. And then for the banks to pick and choose which of those, well, you can call them challengers, you can call them innovators, whatever you call them, there'll be a time when they are mature enough to pass the test of whether they can either serve as a partner, joint venture partner, or to those challenged classical banks, or whether actually there may be a good sense, both from an entrepreneurial and a venture capitalist perspective, to simply exit from their investment, from their ramp up, from the maturity platform, and sell it to a bank who might lovingly embrace it and integrate it, and thereby achieving that modernization that we spoke about earlier. And the opportunities, just to round it off, more in a transactional sense, they're pretty obvious. I mean, for all the big strategic players, these are the par excellence corporate development plays. And for everybody along the investment value chain, like venture capitalists and private equity houses at later stages, they give brilliant opportunities to ramp up and then exit either into the classical channels of IPO, capital markets exit, or bilateral trade sales into large strategic players.
And coming to you, Rupert, Thomas mentioned about the IPO market. It's not been a great time for IPOs in Europe this year, with more and more companies looking to list in America, particularly those that have got a technology element. But what is the potential for fintechs looking to IPO? Who should we be watching?
It's a great question. And the pipeline is absolutely enormous. We have some proprietary tools where we can track IPO candidates. And by doing a search for financial institutions in Europe, we come up with 120 names, which is an incredible number. This includes big names among the challengers like Klarna and Revolut. And I think it should be an obvious point that with 120 names in the pipeline, not everyone is going to be able to list. So one of the ways that people like Thomas and the experts we speak to are telling us to the market will evolve is that people, the backers of these IPO candidates will try and do IPOs. They won't all be able to do it. So at the same time, they'll develop M&A as a plan B. So we can expect to see a variety of deals, whether that's banks buying companies that are coming from the fintech world, fintechs merging to create larger platforms with a better chance of doing an IPO. But with 120 names, I think it's fair to say that we can expect a fair amount of activity in the months and years ahead.
And that's for the UK and across Europe?
Yeah, Europe as a whole, including the UK.
Okay. And Thomas, coming back to you, can you talk about the role of private equity? We know that the private equity groups are sitting on lots of dry powder, but finding it quite hard to deploy. Where does private equity fit into the fintech corporate ecosystem?
I think you can look at it from two angles. I mean, like you say, when you mention that they're sitting on a lot of dry powder, that would probably best marry up with them being investors into a late stage venture capital buildup. So as an investor in existing things, that obviously targets very mature or rather mature entities that will need more capital to ramp up and, for example, globalize, because that's one of the topics that you see with fintech generally. Boundaries, borders get more and more irrelevant. Bar only the one detail that tends to be overlooked a little bit, that regulation still isn't global. It's at best regional, and in many occasions, in many areas, it's still national. So that's a challenge that needs to be overcome. But back to where we started, why does this PE come in? And that's part of the convergence I mentioned earlier. The strategic investments that are led by private equity investors have multiplied over the last decade or so. More than a decade ago, you had barely any interest because it was a complex environment, high market entry barriers. But when you say that in a market that is more strained for identifying appropriate targets, the best and the most agile of these players would naturally be attracted by this challenge and type of target. And you can see how the best played out amongst themselves. So that's the one dimension when you ask, where does PE come into that? The other dimension, after I mentioned that they've been in the mix for the best part of the last decade, is obviously as current shareholders who are preparing exits. And that is linking nicely into an earlier point you were referring to. Where do the classical banks come into this piece? One recurring theme that we've seen over the last 5 to 10 years is private equity investors having acquired and built up, modernized and professionalized in some cases, structures that are now ripe for larger things and in the same investment cycles that private equity houses tend to pursue. They're good for exit, and that is where, and back to what Rupert mentioned earlier, one obvious exit channel would be an IPO. The other obvious exit channel would be selling a mature structure to a best owner type concept, somebody like a big bank or another fintech that builds up scale, builds up economies of scale, and completes the corporate development technology picture.
And Rupert, do you have any examples of deals involving private equity?
There was a great one in April where Advent, the global private equity firm, bought TBI Bank in Bulgaria for a disclosed sum. And I think that this shows that we're still seeing these development deals that that will feed the IPO platform that I mentioned earlier in the years ahead. There was another interesting deal earlier in the year in Portugal where Lone Star had bought Novo Banco, which is not a fintech, it's a traditional bank, but it had bought it as a bailout deal, and it exited earlier this year. It sold it to BPCE for 6.4 billion euros in equity terms, which almost single-handedly improved Portugal's M&A stats for the year. And I think that it's worth mentioning this because it shows how private equity firms can be players in financial services, even though in this case it wasn't a fintech.
Great, thank you, Rupert. And Thomas, a question for you. Without going into lots of detail, could you outline the main regulatory regimes? Because for banks and fintechs looking to cross borders and do international M&A, those different regulatory regimes in different places must pose a big challenge.
Juliana, actually grateful for the question because it's one that is often overlooked in terms of relevance and depth. When we say regulatory, people associate different strands with it. I mean, typically in the fintech environment, the first thing you look at is financial regulatory, meaning licensed operators that aren't even able to perform their services without a public license. And that is by and large still a national environment. So you need to make sure that you're in compliance as a target or as an investor with fit and proper regimes, with all the bells and whistles of local / national regulation. And that in and of itself poses a, I wouldn't say a problem, but a challenge, the need for meticulous preparation and execution to execute these things, which invariably will tend to be multi-jurisdictional. So that's the first one, jumps the eye. Two others I just briefly mentioned, like you say, because they're rabbit holes that are quite deep, but they're invariably relevant. The first one is antitrust. We are talking fintech. We mentioned that earlier. It's a global business by and large. And so by crossing borders, accumulating market share very quickly in those that are successful, you will trigger criteria that are becoming relevant for antitrust regulators. And so on the large deals we're doing, you have multiple filings to be done. And that straddles from antitrust into the FSR and the FDI regimes. But again, that's put to the side. It's execution, but it's not to be underestimated. And the last, and probably the one that people read about in the press a lot when interesting deals are done or actually are being tried, for want of a better word at this stage, it's the public capital markets takeover regulations. And I'm mentioning that because it's interesting. It's not just a technical, nerdy lawyer's thing. that's where the market operators, the stock exchanges, and politicians come in. What is actually really wanted? Because we're looking both in the fintech, but also in the larger banking community. There's a sentiment that financial services being very close to home, meaning being very close to people's pockets, their money, and their investments, that there's a case for national champions being made. Where the truth lies between that political or philosophical angle and a capitalist free markets philosophy, we can discuss in another round, but that's where the real action lies.
UniCredit is a really interesting bank. It's run by Andrea Orcel, who is a very famous investment banker in what people call FIG in M&A. FIG stands for the Financial Institutions Group. And normally advisory firms have separate FIG bankers and lawyers who sit somewhat apart from their colleagues because it's a very different market. It's all about maths and regulation, and it has its own market dynamics. So Andrea Orcel is a storied investment banker in the FIG space. He runs UniCredit. As we all know, UniCredit has been building a stake in Commerzbank. It's been trying to consolidate the Italian market. But at the same time, as if that weren't enough, under Orcel's leadership, it has also been looking at consolidation. There's a really interesting deal that completed in March. It was worth 370 million euros. And UniCredit bought Ion Bank in Belgium and its affiliate or associate, Vodeno, which is a Polish neobank. So I think it's really interesting that one of the top FIG bankers who now runs one of Europe's largest banks is thinking about this trend and developing a playbook. And I suspect that we will see other banks follow in his footsteps.
Bringing that all together and looking ahead to the future, what are the other big trends that we can expect to see in the fintech space for the rest of 2025 and going into 2026?
If only I had a specific answer to that, I'd be a rich man on the capital markets. But joke apart, I think it flows nicely from what we developed over the last few minutes. The main trends that I would bank on, no pun intended, are literally those deals that help complete and perfect the modernized setup of many players. And when I say many players, I'm deliberately abstract to include actual banks, but also all sorts of related providers, services. And let's not forget the stock exchanges of this world, which are huge, which are highly complex, and some say they're actually fintech M&A machines. So that's where I would look at in this space. I believe what we are going to see, certainly, is a continued combination of pieces from the new world and the old world across the fintech, banking, retail, and back office space, all to say that neither the new nor the old, as they were, in and of itself perfect, but what they are creating already is something fascinating and an innovation at a very broad scale that probably only our children will live to tell.
And Rupert, any final thoughts from you?
I think there's a big picture question that we haven't really addressed today, but it's worth mentioning just to provide some context. And that's, if you look at the largest banks in the world, the list is dominated by American banks and Chinese banks. So there is a need for European institutions to scale up. And I think that the convergence that we've talked about and Thomas has addressed so comprehensively today, with a little bit of help from me, is that it fits into that context of the need for much larger European institutions that can compete globally.
Great. Thomas and Rupert, thanks very much. That was Thomas Krajicek of Clifford Chance and Rupert Koch of Merger Market. And just to point out, we are recording this on Tuesday, the 5th of August. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Dealcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please follow it. And if you're on an app that supports it, please do give us a rating and review. To find out more about what we've been talking about on this episode, have a look at our show notes. Join us again next week.